Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Rehab, where we excitedly every Saturday talk to different people about recovery and discovery and uncovery, especially around drugs and alcohol, but sometimes other things as well, like gambling, sex addiction, workaholism, depression, anxiety. I mean, this show's just kind of mushroomed out into talking about all kinds of things that hurt people. But usually the people that we try to get on Radio Rehab are here to talk about the solution, because we all know the problem and what that looks like. So Radio Rehab has just been a great way to talk about the solution and how some people get better and climb out of it and how they stay out of it. So that's what we're about today. LaTanya is with me today to help hostess this, because she's going to be doing the Radio Rehab show as well as a hostess. So you're going to have all kinds of awesome people hostessing the show and bringing on all kinds of good guests and people that we care about and then can share and teach us some things. So our guest today, I've known along the road in recovery. He's worked in the field at times. Right now he's trying to finish his college education. He's a Evansville, Indiana homegrown guy, Wright's High School grad, has a very, very fascinating but incredible story of where addiction can take just good people go down when they get addicted, no doubt about it. So we're happy to have Zach here to share his story. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to call in. Text, there's no below the belt questions. Zach's here. He can share with you anything that you want to ask him. There's nothing below the belt here. So thank you for tuning in, and I want to introduce you to Zach, whose sobriety date is April 16th, 2008. Hi, Zach.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
A little bit about myself. I am an Evansville native, like Lisa said. Born and raised. Grew up on the west side of Evansville, right next to USI. At that time, it was ISUE. And there were pretty much no dorms. All the dorms were apartment complexes, and I had some friends that I grew up next to there. Grew up with a normal childhood, was an only child until about age six, and had a great family. To start my background with drugs and alcohol, I really didn't have using or drinking parents. They really didn't do anything around me. My first drink was a rebellious drink at age six, at a friend's house, sneaking into the whiskey cabinet. So, and at that point, it was probably the worst tasting thing I had ever experienced in my life. And, I never went back to it for quite some time. But I have a little sister that was born about age six, and that changed my world. Got into sports at an early age. I was just your normal teenage, normal young kid that blossomed into a teenager. And, I really didn't have any home problems or any so-called excuses for the way things happened, I just about my freshman year, my parents almost went through a divorce, and I also had a bad injury in wrestling that kind of sidelined me. And over the next year and a half or so, I would change, and by the end of my sophomore year, I'd started drinking and smoking marijuana. So about that time, it was just a weekend thing. I I judged my coolness by how many weekends in a row I would be able to get high. my priorities, needless to say, my priorities changed big time.
Right away.
Wow. I truly think that I was an addict the second that drug hit my lips, the second that drink hit my stomach. There was never, looking back, there was no doubt it was there from the beginning. By my senior year, I no longer cared about school or sports. I quit both. I quit football my junior year, and I quit wrestling my senior year. Which were two things that were incredibly important to me, but they weren't anymore. And then the next thing I know, I'm skipping class to you know, smoke pot or go get some beer. You know, I always knew people that could get it for me at that age, and there was several kids that I was in high school with that could get served. So it was just never, it was never a difficult thing to get. So about the end of the first semester of my senior year, I was forced to withdraw for truancies. I ended up going to Stanley Hall and graduating the following year. I took a couple night classes, but mainly finished up at Stanley Hall. You know, at that point, I still had no consequences whatsoever for my actions. I was pretty much skating, and you know, it wasn't until I hit about age 18 that things started to change.
Let me just ask you something real quick, and maybe LaTanya could tune into this too. You said you hadn't lost anything yet, but you were already in trouble for truancy. You'd already quit wrestling and football. Do you think in an adolescent brain those aren't losses yet till you're an adult and look back and say, oh my God, I was already losing things immediately? Because
yeah,
you said I hadn't lost anything.
I absolutely think that, because at the time, they weren't priorities. And the fact that I was able to graduate anyways, it just fed my ego. You know, it made me believe that even though I'm screwing up, I'm still getting by somehow, you know. And I think it just prolonged my using, you know. Looking back, they are major losses, but at the time, they didn't register that way at all.
Do you think once that addiction hits, and yours very quickly, your whole identity changes anyway?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not the athlete and the academic anymore. You're the dealer and doper.
Yep. Oh, yeah, and I liked that side of it, too.
You did, that identity.
Yeah, there were times where I would have a difficulty making it to class on time because I was getting stopped in the hallway to sell LSD to high school students. So, and it was very difficult because every time I'd be about to get to class, somebody else would stop me, you know. So,
wow, I guess that's more exciting than football. Somebody's stopping you every 2 seconds. It makes you very popular, I guess, amongst certain.
Yeah, yeah. The big shot was also intoxicating, you know. Definitely fed that ego and that addiction. But, you know, then once I turned 18, then it was time to start going to jail. So.
Oh, God. Not college, jail.
Yeah,
okay.
Jail. Everybody's graduating when I should have been graduating, and I'm drinking with them, and then I go to jail that night for my first DUI, first time arrested. I ran 5 stoplights with a flat tire.
God.
And didn't know I had a flat tire.
At 18 years old.
At 18 years old, yeah. I was so intoxicated when the police officer pulled me over and said, you realize you have a flat tire? And I didn't know. I just looked at him and said, take me to jail. I don't have anything to say. Oh, and by the way, the penny thing in the mouth does not work. I had a mouthful of pennies in my when I got
to beat the breathalyzer?
Yeah, a mouthful. I had like 20 in my mouth trying to talk to this police officer.
Too much booze.
Yeah. Well, you know, the basic addict mentality. If one works, then let's try 2 or 20,
so
right? But that's, you know, that's where it took off. I got my license back for 9 days and got another DUI at age 19. You know, picking up my third by age 21. So.
Wow.
Well, you know, I think it was interesting that in the beginning you were talking about how you had no excuses for the things that you were doing. You know, so many times today we spend, and I know I did, so much time and so many years looking for a reason why I do what I do.
Yeah.
You know, when really there is none. You know, I mean, the things that I have going on with me, or the problems that I think are problems that I use to keep going out to, you know, get drunk or to get high.
To justify,
you know,
it.
Really, like you said, it's a disease, and I really don't have an excuse for why I do. It's just I got started, and this is where I ended up at, and I thought that was pretty interesting, because I know when I first started telling my story, I would always say, I really don't have a reason why, you know, you hear people saying, well, this happened to me, and this happened to me, and this is why I do what I do.
You just like the buzz.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
I definitely identify with that. You know, and as I've pursued through my recovery, I've found it less and less important to understand why, but, you know, to understand what to do next, you know, what, where to go next, how to keep growing, you know.
But three UIs by 20, DUIs by 21?
Yes.
So
yes.
You piled up some consequences. Were you realizing then you might have a drinking problem?
You know.
Or a legal, just a police problem?
Well, I was forced to go to the local rehab facility here in Evansville, Stepping Stone. I was forced to go there each time I got a DUI. And, you know, by the second time I started to hear some things that were making sense and, you know, even decided I might try to stay sober for a little while. But, you know, I always tried to do it my own way. I never took the suggestions, and you know, I always got the same consequences and the same results. I would pick back up or go back out, and usually it would lead to more jail and more misery. So, well, always to more misery, but usually to more jail. So. You know,
so you weren't really following the suggestions or directions?
Oh, not anyway. At all. No sponsor, no steps, you know, just going to some meetings.
You so know. You stayed sober, though? But did you use other drugs?
No, I stayed so I would string together a month to 3 months. Longest I stayed sober before I actually decided to do the suggestions would have been was about 8.5 months of what I would call dry time. No sponsor, just meetings, which isn't enough. Mm-hmm. Not for this alcoholic anyways.
Right.
But, it, you know, it would just continuously get worse. It, you know, and I would edit the program, but I would also edit my using and my drinking. I would try different combinations. And I've tried, you know, everything short of using a needle, and that's only because I was terrified of them as a child. But, you know, anything short of that, I tried the combination with that or, you know, whatever substance I can get my hands on. And because of that, my drug of choice changed periodically. So
let's come back after break, Zach, and okay. Hear more about the progression of this thing. Because, you know, and I'm sure LaTanya hears this, too, and you, too. Well, it's just weed. It's just alcohol. I'd never do those other things. So don't go away, Radio Rehab. Zach will be back to share with us more of his experience, strength, and hope.
that crazy?
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Zach, who's told us he's had three DUIs by 21, and he decided he needed to do something about his drinking problem, so he switched to cocaine. Uh-huh. So we're going to hear Zach's progression of his addiction and the insanity of it.
Well, there was a couple stops before cocaine, but I definitely experimented with it early on, too. You know, there was... I mixed pills with the alcohol at first, but that was quickly figured out that that was a very bad idea. I woke up in jail not knowing how I got there. That's a fun one because of alcohol and pills. Woke up in the hospital with 5 stab wounds in my legs and a broken rib. That's
wow.
Probably even worse. I even... rear-ended a school bus on alcohol and pills. So I honestly, to this day, don't know how I got away with that one, but there were no kids in the bus. And, I hit it at about 5 miles an hour because I nodded off. So, just to be real clear, these are not glorifications whatsoever. That is the insanity of the disease right there. I mean, never in my wildest dreams would I think that I was going to be waking up in jail not knowing how I got there, or waking up in the hospital not knowing what happened with holes in my legs, or waking up with the front of my car stuck to a school bus, but that's where that took me. And I quickly got away from the pills, spent a little time doing meth, never really liked it too much. Once, after the, about the third day of staying up, when my mind started to slip, it held no real appeal to me. So I moved on from that pretty quick. But, when I found the cocaine and the alcohol, it was my magic combination. Between this, I want to interject, there were a lot of rehab stays. Up to that point, I had been in rehab probably 6 times.
Do you think they were all worth it?
Gorski talks about the transitional relapser and the chronic relapser. Mm-hmm. And the chronic relapser, the difference between those two is real simple. The transitional relapser picks up something... I know you know these things, Lisa, but for the audience, the transitional relapser picks up something each time that later forms into long-term recovery. And I see now that's what I was doing. So I would absolutely say that every single one of them played a part in where I ended up.
Because you hear people poo-poo in rehab now. Oh, they don't work. They've been through that one or two times already. And I'm glad to hear you introduce us to, hey, sometimes people do get something out of each one, that eventually the landscape turns into recovery.
Yeah. And
but the chronic relapser is just in and out, in and out.
In and
never
out,
has
in and
that
out.
Desire, I guess. I don't know.
But, I truly think that one right statement, one right thing happening to that chronic relapser can instantly turn them into the transitional.
Never give up.
Yeah.
Never give up.
But, right around those time periods too, I also, when I was still, I left out the big one, when I was still messing with the pills and the alcohol, and I ended up almost dying one night due to that. Took an 8-inch steak knife in the back, literally, and bled about 45% of my blood mass out. If I had not bled into my chest cavity, then you guys wouldn't be hearing me today. So
somebody stabbed you?
Yes, in the back, literally.
So you
at a party?
So was violence part of your story too?
Oh, there was a lot of violence. A lot of violence.
Do you think that just goes with the territory of cocaine and alcohol, or do you think certain personalities are attracted to that because you liked wrestling, you liked physical kind of power? Do you think violence?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I was raised to never throw the first punch. My father was very key on that, to never start a fight. But I was also taught to not back down when I know what I'm fighting for is right. And then the X factor was that I was taught that the bigger man walks away. Problem is if you're not also taught to never turn your back on an enemy, that you get sucker punched a lot. So that recipe did get me in a lot of violent interactions. And, you know, when intoxicated, my, you know, the whole system becomes jarbled, and my, you know, my mind's not working right, and you just don't know what's going to happen. But I mean, even that knife wound and nearly dying didn't really slow me down. It just caused me to, like I said, to change up my drug of choice, you know. I mean, and when I eventually landed on cocaine, it was another insane night of pills and alcohol. I left a bar and swiped two vehicles. The first one, I left a note. I ended up paying that girl $500 cash to keep, you know, to keep keep it out of the courts. And then the second one, I got out of the car and the guy hit me with there was a guy in the road, and he hit me with a gun a couple times. And, you know, a basic addict alcoholic thinking, I was looking for something to take the physical pain away, and cocaine sounded like a good idea, you know, because it numbed my jaw.
Right.
You know, I can laugh about these things now,
well,
but
insanity,
it
like
is
you guys said. Wow.
Total insanity. But that last bit only lasted about a year and a half, and thank God, because I don't think I could have gone on much longer. Finally, I sought help. I went to a longer treatment facility in the mountains of Tennessee, a place called English Mountain Recovery. My parents, wonderful people, they paid for it. They bankrolled it. It cost them $9,000. You know, and I don't know that I would be sober had they not have done that, you know. And I thank God every day that I have those parents, because for me, that's what it took. But, you know,
was
something.
Was it a long-term program?
90 days.
I don't see these 30 days anymore. I don't know if that's.
Yeah, the short term.
Better than nothing, but.
They're not even getting that now, are they?
Yeah, you can't even get a month now sometimes.
30 days now, 15 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing local that's
long-term.
Over 14, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah.
This was 90 days for you? Is
yes.
It still around, English Mountain Recovery?
English Mountain Recovery. They have a website, Sevierville, Tennessee. The cost has gone up considerably, though. I actually, a little over a year ago, I was offered a job there, and I almost took it, but I decided it was better to stay here and finish school, you know, where my support group is
and
my friends. And
what do you think made the difference for you there? Do you think the long term, plus you'd had enough treatment before then to
get
you grounded?
Yes and yes. At three weeks sober, I was still so sick that had I been in a short-term facility, I was so angry and so mad, they probably would have kicked me out. But at a long-term facility, they expect that. And at 3 weeks, I was still the meanest person you could think of. But, what it really boiled down to was I had decided inside myself that I was now ready to do whatever it took. I was no longer going to edit the program. I was no longer going to try to do it my way.
That gift of surrender.
That's what it takes.
It does, doesn't it?
I used to joke around and say,
how do you get people there who God knows and he ain't telling?
Like you said, you just gotta be put somewhere. I mean, my ass happened to be prison, you know, and at that time, you know, I just knew I didn't want to do that anymore, and that I just had to find another way, and that, you know, I just had to do what I had to do, and I had to listen, I had to take suggestions, and it didn't matter what it was.
Do you think it was the long term for you too, LaTonya?
Oh, I know it was the long term for me, because I mean,
I did
2.5 years. I knew I didn't need that no more. I mean,
right.
I think it would just be crazy to
come out, be away from your family, and
and just the things that you go through in a prison, and you know, just knowing that, you know, there was a lot of positive and there's a lot of negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just tend to pay attention to things around me and know that, you know.
Mm. Were you in a therapeutic community?
No, I was in prison.
You were in general population.
Yeah, I was in general population. You know, had, you know, things out this.
But she had had enough AA under her belt, didn't you, at one time?
Yeah, I did have some AA under my belt already and stuff. So, you know, I just kind of let God lead me. And,
so it sounds like the same.
Touch with my sponsor and stuff, but.
For you and Zach, both that long-term pause time.
Right. Because, I mean, I have been a stepping stone. I'm like five or six times, you know.
Yeah.
And I do. I'm like you. I believe that, you know, each time I went, I learned something. But it, for me, it was just a matter of not being ready to do what I need to do, always trying to find another way to be able to get that buzz, or, you know, or hang out with those people, you know.
Yeah, I don't need to go to those meetings as often as those other people do. I got school.
Great obsession the big book talks about.
Yes.
The great obsession.
To be able to drink normally again.
Be able to drink or use
whatever
like normal people.
Right. Yeah. Pay attention to other people, you know.
Yeah.
I have known people that, you know, had, you know, drank or whatever before I really know what alcoholism was. And, you know, I just kind of just quit. You know, and never went back again. You know what? That would be a great thing. Why can't I do all this other stuff?
I could be one of those.
Right.
Yeah, just quit.
Yeah,
plug in the jug.
Right, there you go. I just want to be one of those. I'm going to do all this work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Harry did it.
Right. Yeah, just there you go. There you go.
Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We have a great discussion going with LaTonya and Zach. We'll be right back. All right, we're back talking to Zach and LaTanya. Zach's sharing with us that the real gift of desperation happened for him in a 90-day treatment program in the mountains of Tennessee, just getting away for a long time. And LaTanya, both of you said that long-term pause really made a difference.
Yeah, it made all the difference in the world. You know, when I first got into that that program in Tennessee, which was a 12-step program, I would like to add, you know, I used to say that I would stand on my head in the meetings if that's what it took. You know, I mean, I really, that was really the difference. But there was so much anger and so much, you know, just chaos from my world that had piled up that it really was difficult on me at first. I would call my parents and I was just awful to them on the phone, and then we get one phone call a week, so half the time I'm hanging up on them and then they didn't hear from me for a week, you know. But about 3.5 weeks something changed. And I have to mention God, because that's where it started for me. You know, the program teaches us a God of our understanding. You know, we choose our own conception, and I think that's what I needed to be able to go back to praying. And one night I was so just full of just pain that I literally couldn't sleep. You know, I didn't want to be awake, but I couldn't sleep, and I just prayed intensely for about 2 hours, and I had the Bill Wilson burning bush spiritual experience. It's kind of difficult to explain, but it was like a hand just reached in me and pulled all that bad stuff out and left me.
Oh my God!
Just,
like the Green Mile. Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
It just bring the poison
sucked
out.
It out, and it left me warm and fuzzy feeling. And you know, people, you may not believe it, but it changed me overnight, and I mean overnight. And then, you know, and everything was different after that. I mean, I've been sober quite some time now, and there's times where I still wish I could get that feeling back, you know, because it was unbelievable. And I was, you know, 4 weeks sober, and God had done for me what I could never do for myself.
You felt a hand there that
pure took and pain. Total pain to complete warm and fuzzy happiness. Yeah,
I can tell you get emotional when you even talk about it, Zach. So it had to be a powerful turning point for you.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's awesome. That's what it took for you, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that was the only way, because that's what happened, and it literally changed me. My parents, everyone on that mountain immediately saw a difference. I mean, they had planned an intervention for me the next day because of how angry I was.
In the treatment program?
In the treatment program, and they canceled the intervention.
Well, you know what I thought was interesting that you said, too, and I've never thought about it, it kind of was a click for me, that your anger was really about pain.
Yeah.
It wasn't really anger, it was pain.
Yeah. A lot of times, and what I've noticed early in recovery, and it was very true for me, is that emotions get mixed up. I like to think of them as like a wrongly wired automobile, you know, like you turn the key to the ignition and the lights come on, you hit the lights and it pops the trunk, you know, you hit the trunk and it hits the power locks, you know, and so on. But that's how my emotions were coming out, you know. Any kind of hurt or pain would come out in anger, and despair. I mean, they're really the only two things that I knew how to feel early in recovery was anger and despair, and then there was the pink cloud. So, you know, and as someone that has actually worked at a treatment program, I see that in other people too, is that emotions aren't understood. You know, we spend so much time just drowning them out and just, you know, numbing them that we don't remember how to use them, you know, or how to identify them, and that's what it was for me. But you know, thankfully that program was a long one, and I was there for 90 days. I was able to do three thorough steps. I had a counselor there named Ed. Bless his soul. He was a 6'2" New Yorker with a forehead like a Mack truck. And he was no nonsense, and he was exactly what I needed.
Was he in recovery too?
Yes, yes. He had gotten sober at a young age. He got sober about 19, but he was crazy looking. I mean, he was he was a guy you wouldn't want to see in a dark alley, but he was all mush on the inside. God love him. But so, you know, I got a sponsor immediately. It was a temporary sponsor for when I came home. They say your chances of sobriety are increased 50% if you go to a meeting the day you get out of recovery, right, the day you get out of a program. So I did that, you know, and I did everything they suggested. I did a 90 and 90. For the first time, I was doing what was suggested. My first sponsor didn't work out. It was a buddy of mine, but it, you know, that's why it was temporary. He took me to his home group meeting where I ended up meeting a guy that would be my sponsor for the next couple years, that actually took me through the steps, and we became such good friends that he had to stop being my sponsor because we were more friends than, mm-hmm. you know, but today we're great friends. You know, and it was all just parts of a journey.
You just took the action, though. It sounds like what you all have said is it's all about the action.
It is completely about the action. There's a guy that is in my home group meeting that always says you can't act your way. You can't think your way into good action. You have to act your way into good thinking. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's the driving force behind my recovery. So
the action.
Yeah. And, you know, and during this period of time, I went back to school, you know, which I just got my first associate's degree, which
Yay.
Is it's a small
That's
step.
Awesome.
But,
are you kidding? Yeah. That's great.
That
You're 34. I was 40 before I got my bachelor's. I always tease everybody. My senior year was the best 10 years of my life.
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
But
congratulations, Zach.
Thank you. Thank
it just
you.
Gets better and better, doesn't it?
Oh, it's there's still, you know, it's
still life. Yeah.
We have to, once we get sober, once I got sober, then the hard part came. Then
so
it's
what
living.
Do you tell parents that just have a kid like you, a son that's just stubborn, out there, refuses to follow direction?
Do your best to love them through it. You know, I mean, for me, it was all about planting those seeds, you know. Each seed.
You mean seeds as in getting them into treatment, getting
right.
them into counseling?
Right. If you see those patterns coming around, you know.
Go treat it.
You know, you can't force anyone to get better. Just a few days ago, I reached out to a guy and I got called several names for just offering to help, you know. And you know, that's okay. That's part of what we have to do. That's part of what I have to do to stay sober is I have to keep reaching out, you know. We always recite the responsibility statement at the end of my home group meeting, which is a 12-step, you know, and I have to live that every day. You know,
even when we don't feel like it sometimes.
Even when we don't feel like it. Even when the last person called you a bad word. So.
Right.
It don't just happen to you, Zach.
Yeah.
I told him, it don't just happen to you.
Right. Yeah.
But a lot of the serenity that I've gotten is through prayer, even when I don't want to pray. You know, because there's been struggles there. I mean, one of my biggest fears was always that what if my will isn't what, you know, what I want for me is not what God wants for me. I mean, you know, that's a difficult thing to struggle
well,
with.
Well, Latonya and I were just talking before the show about that fine line, but they tell us when we're in diapers in AA, if you pray for potatoes, you still got to get the hoe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to get the hoe.
I just think it's important to remember that. Even though, like you just said, if what you want for you is not what God wants for you, it's always going to be God's way. So.
Yeah, that's
right.
And that's what I've learned is.
Yeah, we'll figure that out.
He's gonna
can't fight it.
It's gonna do whatever you know. It's
His
God's world. It's gonna happen the way it's gonna happen.
Yep.
Yeah. So you know, but that's okay. Today I can accept that, and I have to continue to to put one, yeah, I have to put one foot in front of the other. I'm a man that if I'm not moving forward in my life, I'm going backwards. Yeah. I don't have a middle ground. There is no standing still for me. If I'm not moving forward, if I'm not growing, then I'm that much closer to a slip, and you know, I don't know if I have another recovery in me.
Well, and just practice means we're always going to be working at it. Right. You know, we're not going to arrive, and I think a lot of people think that they get to a place, they're done, and we're not, ever.
Just keep changing and keep changing and keep changing. Same things I tell my sponsors all the time. It's like the world goes round and round, and those same situations come back to you again. It's just what you do with them and how you react. And usually, if you, like you said, you growing and you moving forward, you never react the same way to the same thing.
Right.
You know? It's like, you know, I always use like marriages. You have a lot of people, you know, you marry a girl named Sally, and then you divorce her, but you'll go get another one. And a lot of times you'll see is where the name might be the same, or they look just like the one you just left, you know. It's just like a substitution, you know. And it's like, it's like, you know, they tell us when we first started using, if I hang around with people that I used to get high with, then what do I think about when I see those people? I think about getting high.
You know? That's what your brain remembers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're having a fabulous discussion here. Don't hesitate to call if you want to, and we'll be right back. Well, just this goes so fast. I'll tell you what, it's like being in a meeting. Zach, thank you for sharing. What a miracle since 2008. So we've got some time left. Is there anything you think we need to let people know in closing? What are some of the things that worked really, really well for you? What are some of the things some of our audience should think about not enabling?
You know, to the newcomers, I would say, you know, we can always sit in a meeting and pick apart the things that aren't like us, the things that I didn't do or that didn't happen to me. But if you're an alcoholic like I am, it hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. And the unity behind these 12-step programs is what holds us together. It's what strengthens us. You don't have to do it alone. And that, with that being said, it's about the Me Toos. You know, search for the Me Toos. Yeah, Me Too. That happened to me too. That's what we're looking for.
Look for that identification.
That identification. And then if you hear that, go talk to that person. That's the meeting, what they call the meeting after the meeting, and that's where real recovery begins, is that journey with another addict or alcoholic, you know, one addict or an alcoholic helping another alcoholic. That's the essence of what keeps us sober, what keeps me sober. You know, the parents, just love them. Love them through it.
So do you think if you are a parent or a spouse or a neighbor and you're concerned about somebody, just get them to meetings?
Do your best to plant seeds. You know, you can't force it on anybody. Yeah, I would tell the parents to get to an Al-Anon meeting.
Or an FA, Families Anonymous.
Family is Anonymous. Go get their own help. I mean, focus on what you can control. I mean, you can't control another person. You can control yourself. Go get yourself help. Yeah. Maybe through your own help, it'll help you understand that person better. And then maybe with your better understanding, then maybe you will be able or be in a position to help that person. But we can't force anyone to recover. And God and I both, you know, I'd seen so many people die from this disease that I would have loved to force if I could have, but it just doesn't work that way, you know, because this disease does not discriminate. It just doesn't, you know.
Well, it's like you and LaTanya said, though, you know, you can get forced to, through the courts, to rehabs and counselors and meetings, but the surrender has to be an inside job.
Absolutely. They have to be willing to do whatever it takes, you know, and that's the scary part about it is I've seen people that are willing to do whatever it took that still failed. You know, you have to increase your chances with everything that you can. Anything that you hear as a suggestion that's going to help, do it, you know.
No, I like what you said about transitional relapse compared to chronic relapse. That's interesting, that as long as they're picking something up,
right,
you know,
never give up.
And like he's talking about the similarities, you know, like we go into the rooms, and I know I did for a long time, we go into the rooms, and like you said, we're looking for the differences. Well, that's why we don't want to go back no more, because if we're sitting in that room and we're being honest, there are not too many differences. So that means,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah,
it's like I didn't hear nothing because I'm too busy looking at the wrong thing, you know. Well, if we're in those rooms, then, you know, we pretty much all have the same things going on, and whatever's going on in that meeting, I can't identify with if I'm ready to be honest and, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The truth.
I think you both are on to it is. It's like, no, we, because I'm a woman, because I'm Jewish, because I'm young, because I'm black, because I'm, those things can keep us from joining.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
and they legitimately believe them. I hear people say those things, and it's like, oh, I can't, there's nothing there I can relate to. Well, you better find something you can relate to if you want to get better.
Absolutely. So, you know, and do those steps. They're in order for a reason.
Yeah, thanks for that reminder, Zach. You go to meetings forever, but until you take the steps, it's...
The only thing that I know for certain about this entire program, I've seen exceptions, you know, and the 12-step programs, each one does not have a monopoly on sobriety. You know, get to a 12-step program. There's many. Pick the one you like. But the one thing that I know and I've seen work in people's lives is that the same person will drink again.
That's right.
If you don't change the person that brought you into those rooms, that person will take you back out. Mm. It's just a matter of time. So do those steps.
Thank you. Thank you, Zach, for coming. Will you come back sometime?
Absolutely.
Now you're a friend of Radio Rehab. You've got to come back.
I'd love to. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you. And LaTanya, you ready? Ready to take this show on once in a while?
I'm ready.
Good. Good. Well, Radio Rehab, thanks for tuning in today. It's always a gift for us to be here and share with you. And hopefully Zach's message and our discussion helped give you all some hope out there that need a little bit of that today. And if you have other questions, comments that you didn't want to call in, or you start thinking about things, don't hesitate to call here at WEOA, and they'll get to us, and we'll get back to you ASAP. All right, I guess that's it for a good Saturday. Thanks again, Radio Rehab, and don't forget between now and next week to do the next right thing.